Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. This episode is brought to you by One Cause, creator of powerful peer-to-peer and online fundraising solutions, helping over 6,000 nonprofits make giving more social, mobile, and fun. Reinvent your supporter experience to drive deeper engagement, inspire giving, and motivate fundraising in a virtual world. To learn more about One Cause, visit them at www.onecause.com. Well, podcast listeners, I am delighted to be, we are broadcasting our fourth in this series, this special collaboration with the AFP Toronto chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals. David is going to co-host with me today. I'm going to hand it over to David. David, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Tell us about AFP Toronto, and then ask everyone to introduce themselves, if you will.
Thanks so much, Jason, and welcome everybody, and thanks for tuning into our podcast today. I'm certainly delighted to have been asked to be part of this future fundraiser initiative and to be a part of today's virtual program, as so much of our worlds have become virtual and remote. I'm joined today, myself, David Bell. I'm the Associate Vice President of Advancement and Alumni Relations for Georgian College in Barrie, Ontario, a proud AFP Canada member, and joined today with three colleagues in the educational sector. And so I would just like them to quickly introduce themselves, and then we're going to get underway with our chat. So first over to you, Jeff.
Thanks very much, David. So my name is Jeff O'Hagan, and I'm the Vice President for Advancement at York University. I've been there almost 10 years and also a proud AFP member, and really delighted to be here today to chat. I'll certainly admit that this is my first podcast, but because so much of what we're doing now is remote and online, this is a new way of thinking for me, and I'm really enjoying it so far.
Excellent. Well, welcome, Jeff, and certainly good to hear you online as well. And Andrew, over to you.
Oh, hi. It's Andrew Young here. I'm the Executive Director for Outward Bound in Canada. I've been in this role for about 2 years and had prior spent about 10 years in the health charity world. So we're still relatively new to, kind of education field, and similar to the other folks, first time on a podcast, and looking forward to being part of the discussion today. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, fantastic. Welcome, Andrew, and welcome to the educational sector. And I hope you've been enjoying the time that you've been in your role. Over to you, Nicole.
Hi, my name is Nicole Trites. I'm the Director of Growth and Partnerships at Teach for Canada. For us, that's fancy language for fundraising. I'm very grateful to the AFP for providing so much professional development. We access it all the time, and grateful to be able to give back and sit on this podcast.
Fantastic. Well, thank you everybody for joining me for this. And for those of you tuning in, we all agreed that we already have our cup of coffee in front of us. So picture us in a comfortable room with a cup of coffee and ready to share some of our thoughts about what's been going on and how we're all adapting. Before we jump in there, I just wanted to, thank our co-host, Jason Lewis from Responsive Fundraising, and of course, all the team at AFP's Toronto chapter, which just to add on to my colleagues who are doing a brilliant job of keeping our sector connected and certainly in tune with all the greatest insights and best practices and learnings that are going on during what we would all frame and consider to be a very extraordinarily unprecedented time. And this is also my first podcast, so I join others in the fact that this is not a familiar type of speaking opportunity for me. And one of the things that you're going to experience is that this is an unscripted conversation. We're all in the education sector, and we all have been in the fundraising world for many years. And we're all working with organizations that are adapting and evolving in many different ways to COVID-19. And that's what today's topic is about, looking at how we are adapting, evolving, surviving, how we are retooling our skills as relationship builders, as fundraisers during this rather unprecedented time. And you'll help me provide some additional resources that are available to you through AFP, both on the local chapter, but also on the AFP global site. And, intermittently through our conversation, we're going to promote a few of those because they are excellent and they're there for our use. And just as Nicole mentioned, that there's so many great tools there and so much good thinking that it's amazing that we're all part of a sector where we're coming together, we're sharing, and we're exchanging ideas and innovations to make sure that we all come out of this in the best way possible. And so quickly, one of those great resources is on the AFP Global website. It's called the COVID-19 Resource Guide for Members. And when you get inside that, you're going to be impressed with all of the great stuff. There's a range of practice areas. There is lots of stuff about fundraising at home during a crisis, leadership, digital engagement and events, some fantastic material. So I encourage you to go to the AFP Global website and check that out. Now, let's get this conversation underway. And, I have that job of getting us started and what I know will be a very chatty group here. And the number is kind of staggering, and I maybe don't have my math right, but we're 45 or so days plus into this in terms of when this pandemic, if we draw a line, when it really impacted the way we all work, how we are serving our constituents, and how we are connecting with one another as colleagues. And so 45 plus days, that's a long time. And I used to work at a business school, so I think in quarters. And so that's more than half a quarter. And for each of us, that has been a time where we've learned some things. We've had some turning points, and we've had some, epiphanies about what's been happening. And so I want to just sort of throw open the conversation in this chat to sort of say, what's standing out for you now as one of the most kind of significant learnings or turning points? Fully aware that we are still much into this crisis and still navigating it on a day to day. Anybody want to give me their first reaction?
Yeah, it's Andrew here. I think. The one thing that is really striking to me is the absolute relentlessness of this crisis. And I think, I think back to when the Education Committee of AFP first reached out, which was about a month ago. And here we are a month later, and we're still at it and still trying to figure out kind of where do things return back to normal, whatever the new normal is. And for me, it's just the day in, day out relentlessness of the crisis and trying to figure out every day what's the new information and how are we going to adapt, in that day. I mean, we've put together strategic plans and work plans, and, within 1 day or 2 days, we just kind of have to toss the whole thing aside sometimes just because the landscape has shifted that quickly. I wrote an update for my board yesterday, and it's by far the longest update I've ever written in my life, just because so much has changed. So, for me, that it's just the absolute nonstop relentlessness of the information changing and the changing landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. It's Jeff here. I would say also that the speed at which things are changing is remarkable. As Andrew was saying, when a decision you make today could be negated by tomorrow and could change. And one of the things that I've noticed really that I found fantastic, given the relentlessness, given the way that changes happening so quickly is how resilient our teams, our staff have been, certainly in the university sector where I am, our ability to pivot and take, you know, a university, one of the largest in Canada that's got more than 55,000 students and have them move to online learning, for example, essentially overnight, and still get, you know, 98% of our students through their finishing their year, was just remarkable. And, you know, in terms of our own staff teams and advancement, you know, alumni and fundraising, again, the ability to really pivot very quickly, and embrace new ways to get in touch with people, new ways to engage people, but really continue with that commitment around engagement that's so necessary at this time. It has been really remarkable. I've been really impressed with our staff teams, in their ability to do this.
I'll echo all of that on my end. Yeah. It's been, I mean, shocking to see the pace of the world these days. Things just move so quickly. You feel like you're treading water and trying to keep your head above enough to gain some perspective. But at the same time, there's been this incredible slowing down in the world as well that's happening in parallel. Everyone's at home. Everyone's seeking connection. People have been more responsive than ever on my end, which has also been an unexpected surprise to me. And so it's about how to keep up with the times, but also take advantage of that slowing down, that relationship-based connection that people are seeking right now. And for me, if I can add some sentiment to this conversation, the second you lean into that connection, I think the biggest learning for me is on every level, we're better together. You know, whether it's working across our team in new ways, it's been incredible to see that sort of internal adaptation. Working closely with our donors, leaning into that desire to connect, but really looping them into our new strategy and gaining their insights to be true partners. Working with peer organizations, it's been incredible to lean into those partnerships, you know, ensuring coordinated service delivery and being more efficient with what we're doing right now. And then the sector in general to see coordinated advocacy efforts, just the way we're working together has been remarkable to me. And I think it is this balance of the keeping up and slowing down and connecting. It's a bizarre time. I often don't know what to make of it, but when I can, I lean into that slowdown and connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's so many, you know, you guys all just said some things that really kind of resonated well with me there. And I think, you know, you were mentioning there, Andrew, about the need to, you know, adapt quickly and Jeff, you know, the ability to sort of need to, be agile and pivot just as fast. And Nicole as well, what you were saying there about, we're all in this together, but we're sharing like we never have before. You know, I think, you know, as fundraisers, we are always, very much focused on, you know, our strategy and our way forward. And thinking about, you know, what's the next 12 to 18 months look like? What's the next, you know, 5 years? What's the next 10 years? When you think about some of the campaign planning that many of us are into, how have you, you know, adapted with your teams in terms of how you're thinking about strategy on a day to day?
I think, you know, what I'm seeing is that, again, you do have to be agile. We have to look for these opportunities. And we're trying to stick to our global goals, our overall, desires and the way that we're trying to operate. But I think we're looking to be responsive and to take what the situation will give us. And I think, Nicole, you're right that we're actually finding, and I'm hearing this from my team members, I'm seeing it myself as well, people are available. You know, there was some trepidation, certainly with stock markets moving very quickly, you know, in the wrong direction, and things looking reminiscent of a previous downturn, like in 2008, where there was some concern about whether people will be continuing to give. But we're finding that people really are available, and they really care about what's going on with our students and with others. So I think being open to taking those opportunities as they come, while continuing to focus on our overall strategy has helped us. And I think there's always sort of that fear: should we still be out and talking to people? But it seems to me that this is the time to be able to really double down on engagement, because it's going to be necessary for us. You have to be more diligent, and I think in the long run, that's going to really help.
Yeah, and I think I would agree, Jeff. You know, the point about engagement is so important, and you know, I think you know we had a number of projects that were underway prior to you know the kind of social distancing and the crisis hitting you know in full, and we've found that you know with the team that there's been you know a real shift I think into working on some of those other projects as well. And at the same time, engaging with some of our stakeholders and donors in different ways. And, you know, just one quick example, we were working on a social return on investment project, with, you know, through a pro bono partner and we were going to do that no matter what. And in this time, you know, that was a chance for us to really leverage that and use it as a great way to get out to some of our donors, and get their input on something that's really important for us. And I think, you know, just having those types of opportunities, for us has been really helpful. And with the team, you know, I think just watching us go to remote work really quickly and trying to figure out that technology. And I, you know, we're a national organization. And so one of the things that I've noticed as well is that, you know, typically, you know, whether you're national or provincial or local, you know, you always have people who are kind of at the head office and then people, you know, in different offices. And it's actually kind of leveled the playing field in a way. So with the team, you know, our staff team, whether you're in Vancouver or Huntsville or in Toronto, everybody's, you know, communicating and accessing each other in exactly the same way. And I think that's been really, you know, a nice kind of, you know, silver lining that, you know, you're taking the power dynamic out of Toronto in our case, so to speak. So it's been interesting to kind of see that, how that works.
I would just say to add to that point, I'm finding the same thing where our communications, our ability to work together, the way that our teams function have actually in some ways been enhanced because we have to be more diligent. We have to be reaching out in ways that we wouldn't have before. You can't have hallway conversations anymore. So you've got to have the ability to really to reach out and get that opinion. But I'm finding that, as you say, that it's leveling the field a little bit and allowing for even better communication and ability to work together than we've seen before.
It's interesting on our end, we're simultaneously working on three strategies, this unforeseen short-term strategy with kind of new emerging needs of the organizations as we adapt, as we address kind of the changing needs of our First Nation partners as well. And then we have planning for what is this that's ahead of us? Is it a recession? Is it a depression? You know, a 1 to 3 year plan at what that might look like for us and aligning it with our overall 5 year plan. And so I'm kind of in the thick of navigating all of that right now. But the team has just been remarkable and the short-term strategy development has been really motivating for the team. It's interesting to see all new avenues popping up as well. Just 2 days ago, I think it was, you know, Instagram now allows on your live stream to raise funds for charities through your live chat, and we'll give that a shot and keeping a pulse on the innovations that others are coming up with to contribute to this unique time that we're in. That has been a motivating aspect. And as we shift to the longer term lens, I think it'll help fuel us. But it's an interesting, interesting time. I think I'll keep saying that through all of this. Happy to learn from all of you.
You know, and I think you guys were all just saying something that you use similar words to describe it as, you know, something that we're all experiencing in organizations. And when you think about the educational sector and how it has had to adapt, and in the cases of, you know, the college that I'm at, you know, thousands of courses becoming remote delivery in a matter of weeks, and students that are used to coming to campus and experiencing a whole kind of ecosystem of activities and friendships, you know, now very much like everyone being sequestered to a remote delivery webcam. And so that's quite a radical shift. And when I'm trying to think about how has it changed my fundraising practice? How am I doing things differently beyond, you know, using, you know, my webcam and my email a lot more? But have you seen, you know, any major shifts in how you manage your fundraising practice?
Well, David, sorry, you're kind of getting at, like, in your, you know, day to day, you know, what's changed in terms of the practice?
Yeah. How has your day to day changed in terms of how you're managing your fundraising practice? You know.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd pick up on a couple points, you know, that you know, for me that, you know, Jeff and Nicole mentioned as well, you know, in our case, the day-to-day, I mean, that's a technical thing. Obviously, everything is, you know, we're either talking to people over the phone or a video conference or whatever, and you know, we're not meeting in person. So, that, you know, I mean, that part, I think, you know, everybody, regardless of where you're at, is dealing with that. And I think for us as well, you know, we've been where we can have been making asks, but really it's about, you know, just engaging people in the conversation and also I think picking our spots, as to what the longer term view, is. And, you know, in our case, you know, we tend to be serving people all year round, running our courses all year round. And just the nature of what we do, which is in person and experiential, we've actually had to pause a lot of that stuff. And so, you know, the discussion that we're having with donors is, you know, is really about engaging people, you know, in terms of the overall cause. And we're going to be shifting as well to, you know, our mandate, which we believe will be really important to help the country kind of recover from this. And engaging, you know, our actual students, in that, and then bringing the donors along in that journey. So there's, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, keeping our powder dry right now, I think, would be a safe way to say it. And that we're kind of ramping up into some probably bigger things, you know, bigger asks that we'll be looking to make, through the summer and into the fall, as the national conversation changes, from, you know, the immediate crisis of, you know, we need to help, you know, the front lines right now, to, okay, where's the country going to be at? How are we going to recover? And, you know, how are we going to get people back outside, breaking social isolation and, you know, the need for social emotional learning and all that kind of stuff, where we come in. So, you know, so the practice part, you know, I think that's, you know, really where we're at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess even for me, like, and this is maybe a bit of a, more micro point, but I think for me, one of the things has been, you know, with the social distancing and working remotely. And if you think about being in a major gift fundraising practice, those best practices that we all learned years ago around, you know, looking at our portfolios, looking at those touch points and, you know, getting back into those contact reports and really making sure that we have those regular engagement touch points. Now, that's always something that we're always, you know, doing a great job at, but, you know, those best practices and those tried and true, I think, fundraising formulas have, you know, are serving us well in this period. We know that, you know, reaching out, connecting, and really, you know, doing, you know, I've heard the word care call a lot on a lot of different publications and, you know, webinars, that how important that is. And, in some cases, it's given us a little bit more time to take a look at, those relationships and the ones that, we are, you know, trying to re-engage and reactivate as well.
Sorry. I think on our end, we're trying to keep a good pulse on where we're at in the arc of what matters right now, really. And so to understand where we're at, that emergency response and frontline work, that's what matters right now. And it is the perfect time to be respecting that and leaning into our partnerships with donors and focusing on communication and staying in touch, but really trying to keep on top of it to understand, you know, when does education come back into play? Schools are closed right now, and that matters too. And I anticipate it comes shortly after the emergency response. And then what about all of the people who are out of work? And for higher education, when does workforce development come back into the conversation? And so trying to understand where we're at in terms of the country's response to what we need to be focusing on right now, and really moving along with that and understanding where it's appropriate. When should we be pushing on the fundraising? When should we be pushing into just keeping in touch with all of our partners as well? So trying to keep a pulse on that. And I do think, you know, education is coming more and more into the conversation right now, especially as in different provinces, schools are beginning to open and questions of that are coming up right now. So keeping on top of that, and I'll let you guys know when I start moving forward on any of those.
Yeah, thanks for that that point. I think it's a really good one to understand where we're at in the cycle here, and, you know, in this very real crisis that's affecting people in many different ways. We certainly see it in our case at our university and many other organizations in the lives of our students themselves. And we have a tremendous number of students that have real urgent needs. We've established a special COVID-19 relief fund for those students for special bursaries, other kinds of supports. And, you know, within a short time, just a couple of days, we got something like 9,000 applications for help from some of these students. So certainly our donors are interested to know that our alumni are asking how they can help. And so the stage that we're at now is sort of the immediate, but there will be really long-term effects to this as well around the whole education system and where high school students are losing parts of the year trying to learn online. And that whole transition will be really challenging. So, you know, understanding the cycle and where we're at, I think is a really good point as well. And it speaks to that need to be flexible and to pivot and to look for those areas where people that are willing to engage with us can really help. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it's also about respecting donor dollars, understanding there is a heightened need in general right now, and understanding our responsibility to that. I think more than ever, we're looking outward to peer organizations to understand, you know, where is there alignment for a joint appeal somewhere? Where can we work together to ensure that donor dollars are being used in the most efficient and effective way? And it's not something we've done before, but it's something that I think is important to do right now when money's needed in many different areas to make every effort we can to not dilute the funds going towards important causes. So we're mulling that over right now. And I think it will be a part of our strategy during this period and moving forward as well if we learn how to adapt in that way.
I would say that, you know, that's a really, I like that expression you use, the art of what matters, because, you know, in the college I'm at, you know, you see the students that are coming through programs, they are, you know, we have alumni now on the front lines. PSW graduates are the ones that are, you know, going into the long-term care facilities to care for patients, the nurses, them, the paramedics. And, you know, I think it, allows for some of our constituents and our donors to really understand even more about the, you know, how they've helped us be able to create these strong programs and how, you know, the college in this case and like a university or another organization has been able to, you know, we're getting through this because of the folks that are on those front lines and they started their careers in education and they got their training here. And so, you know, as much as you're being able to tell some different stories during this time too. And I think that's something that I'm noticing I'm doing a lot more of is, some really interesting storytelling about how alumni are out there and they really are having, significant impact in ways that perhaps the spotlight wasn't naturally always going there, originally. So, and students that are now in our advanced technology center that are helping build those face masks, that hospitals and healthcare facilities are so hungry for and that we've been able to work with some of our partners to get those raw materials and then be able to use 3D printing labs to be able to get, to be able to be there and help answer a really critical need. It's quite impactful in being able to show our donors that have helped us over the years that this is happening because they put us in such a good place.
You know, I think also what we're seeing too is, you know, it's also an opportunity to, you know, kind of clean up the shop floor, so to speak. So that maybe some of the less glorious projects, you know, for us, you know, our operation has changed and we're seeing, you know, some attention paid to those things that we wish we could have paid more attention to. You know, whether it's, you know, cleaning up our database or, you know, website projects and, you know, the things that you always wish you had time to get to. So, you know, we're not just sitting on our hands here either and trying to take advantage of the fact that things have changed and we're trying to do those less glorious things that are important as well. So,
I mean, I've been overwhelmed by our donors. At the outset of this, there were a handful of donors that proactively reached out to see how we were doing, to assure us that their donations were confirmed and good to go to talk about any emergency needs we might have. And that sort of generosity was overwhelming to me and also unexpected. You know, we were coming to a time where we thought we better reach out to everyone and make sure that everything will be fine and, you know, understand how we'll move forward in this crisis. But the proactive outreach was an unexpected and really wonderful show of partnership, which was great. And I think the thing I've been most appreciative for is opportunities, like you were mentioning before, to highlight the incredible things that are going on. And I think those have been our points of connection, to stay in touch with what is actually going on that's relevant in our work. So to share the highlights of how teachers and students are adapting at this time, to share personal stories about how our team and how ourselves are adapting at this time. It's been those personal points of connections that have just been remarkable. And the generosity on top of that, I mean, it's unheard of in my experience for people to proactively reach out to you. And so I've just been, I've been amazed by the leadership of the sector in doing that. And it happened as a trickle at first and then a flood kind of from everyone to assure us that, you know, things were stable, things were good, and that we were all in this together. And that has just been incredible.
I certainly feel that, you know, there's a hunger for the information that we're sending out, because there is so much on the news and there's so much in the newspapers and emails that people are reading about COVID-19, that the stories, just like you said there, Nicole, like the stories that we can tell about how our constituents and our donors are helping, you know, make the situation more positive for folks and change the outcome in any way they can. I know that there's a real hunger for that information, not to get too tactical on it, but one of the things we're seeing in terms of our communications is that, you know, our digital communications are being read at rates that they never have been before. And that's incredible. All of us can go talk about open click and open rate and all that kind of stuff, but I'm seeing levels that we haven't seen before in our digital publications, which aren't necessarily talking about COVID-19, but they're telling the stories that I think our constituents, that's why they love our organizations, that's why they give, and then during these times, they, you know, that's a place that they're going to for comfort in some respects.
Yeah, well, I'm seeing that as well, you know, people really wanting to engage with what we're doing and understand how we're doing at this time. We're getting outreach from our donors and our alumni and others who are asking how they can help. They want to get engaged with our processes. And a couple of conversations in particular that I recall where people are saying, look, this is why higher ed is so important. This is why I'm a supporter of education. Because we see that it's going to be critical to our recovery efforts as we come out of this pandemic. We need to have strong institutions. We need to have a strong society, and that starts with in many ways with education. So I think it's reaffirming our donors' commitments as well. And we've been quite impressed with the response that we've gotten. And David, we're seeing the same thing with our remote alumni engagement activities, where we might we had a lecture series, for example, that used to be in person, and we might get 30 or 40 or 50 people coming to an event periodically. Now we're getting hundreds coming to these online sessions, where we might have experts on COVID-19 speaking or other engagement activities, and that's also then generating interest from people to support us, to say, you know, how can I support that research that's being done? It's a great way to get people engaged at a time, you're right, when they're also looking for credible information that they can rely on.
I have to share, as I'm listening to all of you. So Andrew, you were sharing that your university, you know, converted 98%, you know, some, you know, your entire program had to go to online learning. And I teach over at the local college. And I one of the things that I learned about myself is that I have 30 students in a room, and it's almost impossible to get them to get to know them all by name. But yet teaching them in groups of five in a Zoom classroom, a Zoom setting, allows me to actually get to know them in a much more intimate sort of way and learn them by name. And so I've learned this about myself in this teaching process. Is there anything else that you all have experienced through this process about yourself where you're saying, hey, this has actually helped me develop a particular skill that I can now value and appreciate about myself?
That's an interesting one. I think that what I'm seeing is that again, the diligence with which we have to be communicating with each other, I think, is requiring a different kind of engagement and work that we have with within our teams. I'm talking about, and so what I'm finding is that we're working at ways, because we're having groups meeting on Zoom and having other kinds of interactions of making sure that people are feeling that they're able to connect. Some people may not be used to this kind of group interaction, and getting them to come to the table in different ways and allowing for different ways for them to participate, I think has been interesting. And I'm finding that because of the way this has all worked out for us, I'm able to participate in various groups and team meetings that I wouldn't have otherwise necessarily been in. And I'm getting fascinating insight from staff who I wouldn't always be face to face with. And I think that's been a real gift, actually, to get everybody's input.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I'd agree, Jeff, you know, the connection with team and the way we're working has completely evolved. One of the things that I'm seeing as well, and I'm trying to figure out too, is, you know, and it's a generalized kind of statement that, you know, mental health concerns amongst employees and just people in general are elevating. And I think that for me as the leader of the organization and our senior team and managers throughout the organization, the need to be there for their staff at an emotional level, I think, has really increased and has changed from where we were at prior to this. And I think, you know, it's compounded by the issue that we're always, you know, connecting online. And so that's got, you know, great advantages in terms of being collaborative. It's also can be an alienating because you're talking to somebody through a monitor. And so, you know, I think that, you know, so I can't, you know, I'm sure there's lots of, you know, kind of human skills that, you know, that are there. But, you know, the level of concern and empathy, I think, that's required right now for your employees, and at least in our organization, has really gone up. And just kind of, you know, trying to figure out how to be there for people when you're not physically there for them.
I think it's really important, Andrew. We, you know, I think we really always have to continue to acknowledge that we're living in a real crisis situation here. It's not just that we're all working from home, but we're stuck at home in a crisis trying to get work done. And you know, I'm aware of staff, some of my staff team members who've lost family members to COVID-19, and the stress and the mental health issues, you're right, I think are amplifying. You know, this isn't something that's just happening to other people. It's happening to all of us. And I think we all have personal stories about people that we know that have been affected by this, and that's going to continue. And so we really have to look at how we're managing our expectations of our ability to continue with our work in that environment. Some people have profound challenges to be able to continue to be productive and to be working and doing what they want to be doing. But we have to be really understanding that people have personal circumstances that can make that very difficult.
It's been a huge focus for us as well. And certainly everything feels much closer to home when you're in your home all the time. And, you know, it's been great as an organization to understand how to address that. But I think structurally, we're thinking of creative ways to do that as well. Understanding that people have added responsibilities of caring for their family, caring for themselves. And we're in this time where, you know, it's an exceptional circumstance and we may need a little bit more space ourselves. So setting ourselves up as a department to be able to accommodate that, to make sure that people feel like they have the resources, but also the team to support them. At the outset of all of this, we made sure that we did a lot of cross-training and handover documents so that we were prepared to kind of step in and support should anyone need to step away for a little bit. And I think that sort of stepping up has been really supportive, and not only across the department, but the team, to be flexible in the ways that we approach our work has been a real benefit to just making the team feel supported and like they can take the time to focus on what they need to.
I'm thinking of the recording that we did previously with the healthcare, those that are working on the front line, the healthcare organizations. But Nicole, I'm thinking of your organization in particular. In many ways, COVID-19 has to have strengthened your case for support, for example, because, you know, advocating for the, you know, the student who doesn't have access to a classroom right now becomes all the more important for a cause like yours. And so part of the story that we convey to a donor, you didn't have this part of the story, I get, you know, in many ways, you know, 6-8 weeks ago, right?
Certainly it's become a part of the narrative, especially as the country shifts to focusing on education and access to education and how that differs from place to place. Access to education is something that we're quite used to advocating for within our organization. And so it is a variation of something that we've talked about quite a bit. It is something that we've begun talking about. Again, like I said, trying to keep a pulse on what's an urgent need and what is an important thing that we're going through. And education is very, very important. So we are taking efforts to make sure that we adapt our programs to make sure that teachers are supported in a distance-based learning setting, which does require some added capacity in this remote context. So we have been actively fundraising on that front while we take a pause on our core programming. You know, we're adapting those to online, but really leaning into the urgent need in that area. So certainly it has caused for some shift in our appeals in the short term. One thing that we're thinking a lot about as well is making sure internally across the board that we're being thoughtful with our investments of resources, capacity, time, which is so important to our donors. So this is very important right now, absolutely. But school closures aren't uncommon in the North. They happen. And so how can we leverage the infrastructure that we're setting up right now to have a longer term impact across every program? We're thinking about it. How can our shift to remote be leveraged to broaden our impact? Who can we share this with now that we're doing it in this new way? And I think that's the most powerful stuff that we can convey to our donors. Yes, in the short term, we need to learn how to address this, but here's what the long-term impact will be. And that has been a really powerful conversation to have.
I think
it's almost like this is like really highlighting some of the, you know, kind of pre-existing issues with society, you know, that were there. And, you know, from what you're describing, you know, Nicole, and it does kind of get back to, you know, what you had mentioned before as well, of like the arc of what is important and what's important is going to change really quickly as we go through this. And, you know, just yesterday, like, you know, I saw an ad from one of the banks, doesn't matter which one, but it was the first ad that I'd seen that was really about focusing on the future. And, you know, in that case, it was like getting back to the little things in life, you know, like, you know, riding the bus or whatever. And, you know, and I do think about that, you know, from a, you know, a bit broader lens, like, you know, getting back to those things that are important. And in your case, Nicole, like, you know, access to education in the North, and, you know, for us, you know, trying to get people back outside and, you know, and, you know, breaking social isolation, like those conversations are going to happen soon, you know, very shortly here, right? Like at the societal level. I mean, I don't mean with our donors. And I think just trying to ride that wave, I think, is so important.
Yeah, I think that there are things that we've picked up on and that have been exposed a little more than they would have been otherwise. And, you know, when I talked about earlier how we, you know, we had all these students and suddenly they're able to almost seamlessly move online, but it's not always seamless. You know, we quickly found that we had hundreds, thousands of students actually that said, well, I don't have proper internet access, or I don't have a computer at home. You know, I use the computer lab at school to be able to do my work. And so, you know, we quickly put together a laptop loan program. We found a supplier to provide us with a couple thousand laptops that we could be loaning out to people. And there's some hidden barriers to access that people may not otherwise see. And it really opened our eyes to that in terms of students who normally we wouldn't have noticed that they didn't have good access to online learning capabilities. And you know, that was just an example that stuck out for me to say that there are these societal issues that have always been there. And we've, you know, York University's always talked about access as being really important, trying to provide a very broad demographic of students access to a research intensive university, you know, that's committed to the public good. But you sometimes don't always notice the things that are really important in that. And that was an interesting one for us.
Nicole, you've got me itching. Please, as an American down here further south than you are, you've got to explain to me why that is that you all experience school closures more routinely. I'm just itching to understand that better. I genuinely want to understand that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, and it's different in each community. Sometimes it can be a crisis in the community. Sometimes it can be an issue with infrastructure, various reasons. But with kind of a smaller school staff and lower capacity when it comes to education, oftentimes the school has to close to tend to more urgent needs. And there tend often to be very urgent needs in a Northern First Nations context. So school closures do happen. And it's great to think about, you know, the innovation and resilience of schools, of teachers, of teaching assistants, of school staff right now, and how those ideas might be leveraged to drive more support in the coming years as well.
Yeah, that's a fascinating place to sort of wrap up. I think you all will enjoy, as I get the privilege of listening to these recordings, and I get to listen to your language and the stories that you're all telling. So before we wrap up, David, would you mind just telling us a little bit more about about AFP Toronto, where we can find some information? If somebody's listening to this and wants to become a member, where would you send them?
Great. And thank you very much, Jason, for the co-host opportunity today. I really much enjoyed that. And thank you to my certainly a lot of positive stories coming out of today and a lot of good ideas and insights. So thank you to my colleagues. And as you mentioned, Jason, you know, the Association of Fundraising Professionals Greater Toronto Chapter is certainly here to support all of its members. AFPToronto.org is the website URL where you can go there and access all of the information that is available to members and prospective members. If you're listening to this and looking to become an AFP member, you can find out all that information on the AFP Toronto website. And certainly stay in touch with the other resources that were mentioned throughout this podcast, including AFP Connect, the online forum where AFP members can stay in touch and share resources, as well as visiting the AFP chapter website regularly so you can see more local resources as they become available, learn about upcoming virtual events, and stay in touch with members across the GTA.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.